Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today's guest brings a unique and valuable perspective to the conversation, what it's like to step into a leadership role within a family business when you're not part of the family. John Bozzle is founder of Bozzle Advisory Group, a consultancy focused on helping privately held and family-led businesses improve leadership, alignment, and growth strategy. Before launching his own firm, John held senior leadership roles at two family businesses, Becht and Pilco, where he helped shape culture, drive performance, and successfully navigate the complexities of operating within a family-owned structure. If you're considering a leadership role inside a family business, or you're a family owner thinking about bringing in outside talent, this episode is for you. John, welcome to the show.
Ed, it's good to talk to you again. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So, John, let's start with your new venture. What is Bozzle Advisory Group and what kind of work are you focused on right now?
You said it to start off with, Ed, but drawing from my experiences with family businesses, a little with public experience as well, strategy development, operational processes, including organizational development, leadership and training. And I want to preface all this by saying that I've had great experiences as a non-family exec in family businesses. They've all been positive experiences. I've learned some terrific lessons. And I'll give you a little bit of history here. I'm going to set you back just a bit. I actually started when I was 16 years old working for a family business as a co-manager of a fireworks store in South Carolina. So I worked side by side with the owner and his children. And I also did fireworks shows with them for private clubs, for events, store openings and stuff. It was heady for a 16-year-old, but that's my start there. And then when I got out of the Navy, I went to work for what I would consider to be the American dream family business. It was two owners, did not have college degrees. They started an engineering company in the middle of a really tough recession, but they ended up being fantastically successful. And one of the themes that came through with being involved in a family business was that they were really open to ideas for developing and implementing work processes, using technology and hiring good people. So I've enjoyed my experiences with family business, and that's what I'd like to bring back into the community now.
Awesome. Awesome. Beyond Becht and Pilco, you were a grizzled veteran of a family business going way back.
Now that you say it that way, it does sound a little grizzly, but I saw it as part of the process. Again, great experiences.
Awesome. Awesome. So let's talk a little bit about your most recent senior roles, two family businesses, Becht and then later Pilco. Let's start with Becht. What attracted you to that opportunity, John?
Number one, family business. I'd known Chuck for a little while. I'm an avid networker and had met him through a previous company, but it was the opportunity. He was looking for two things. He wanted to, I think, put a little more organization around operational processes, which I had a lot of experience with that. And then he was also considering the transition to the second generation. The opportunity really to get involved and just doing what I do best was really great for me. And then later, as the second generation moved into executive roles, we experienced some pretty substantial growth. And everyone who listens to this podcast knows, and everything that goes with it. It was a lot of fun. The owners were very clear-eyed about what they knew and what they didn't. And they actually hired a coach to help them scale up. It was a great experience.
Awesome. Awesome. And then later, Pilco. What was alluring about the Pilco opportunity?
So that was very interesting, too. Pilco is a boutique management consulting firm on the operational risk side. It was an opportunity to consult at a much higher level within the same industry. So I had some background in the industry, but now I'm talking to the executives. We wanted to substantially grow over a 5-year time period. So my skills in business development, strategic planning, and project execution fit really well. And then there was that connection at the very, very senior level of my clients that I found very attractive.
Nice, nice. So for somebody that's never worked inside the ecosystem of a family business, how would you describe the biggest differences compared to, say, a more corporate or private equity governed environment?
There's a bunch, but I'd say that the top three, number one, and you've heard it on your podcast before, is the family culture. As a non-family member, I think you feel a real empathy for employee well-being. You know, there's company picnics, you get thank you notes. They talk about their private life, which you'd never hear in public business. People tend to keep that out. In the end, you really feel like people care about you, and that drives a lot of people to better performance. I think another one is I'll call it a stronger sense of purpose. It's a good combination of what they're good at. Think Jim Collins and Good to Great. What are you really good at? With the finance side. In my experience, when you reach the executive levels on public companies, there tends to be more talk about Wall Street expectations and are we making the quarterly numbers? And sometimes as a mid-manager in that situation, you feel like sometimes it's more important to make your quarterly numbers than it is to keep the customer happy. I never felt like that in a family business. And the third one, and this is very important, is the long-term view, and especially with regards to corporate finance. If you've worked for private equity or public firms, that the end of the month or the quarter, that's a stressful time. And that's cumulative stress too, because you know that it keeps coming. Profitability is always the top dog, but family owners recognize when economic conditions turn down. But my experience with them, depending on where they are in the business cycle, they're more likely to lean into more marketing, discuss strategic steps. In one case, the company that I work for decided to hire an entire new business division when a competitor was just discharging people during COVID. It seemed a little crazy at the time. You know, they were well capitalized. And now, 4 years later, they're a leader. They're highly profitable. They've grabbed a lot of market share. I'll call that the triumph of the long-term view. And certainly my experience with family business, that is something that really leads the pack with regards to a differentiator.
And I would say that talking to many family business leaders and those on the outside who, like yourself, support them or have an outside view of them, they all seem to want different things, but there's a commonality. And it's that continuity of prosperity. They want to know that as that generational shift happens, the boat is steady. You know, the boat is going forward. It's not sinking. People aren't jumping ship. Forgive some of the seaworthy puns. I know you had a bit of a naval career in your background. So
thank you for that, Ed. No, I truly believe in, and I've experienced that. You've heard it on your podcast too. The important part of the long-term view is keeping it in the family. When it comes to the topic of succession, that's a whole different story. You've heard that on other episodes before, but really, how do we keep it in the family? And that's, again, this topic is very interesting because as a non-family executive, there's a little reluctance sometimes to do that.
Yeah. So speaking of that, what would you say are some of the advantages of being a non-family executive in a leadership role in a family-run company?
Well, I think primarily when you're considered for that role, you're an outsider, you're brought in for a specific reason. It could be that they just need the organizational skills or they need someone to drive things. There's a lot of different reasons, but as you gain the trust of the owner, whether it's through the interview process or your first days in the job, my experience has been they are likely to give you substantial latitude to do what needs to be done. Now, you have to keep them informed. You have to telegraph your next steps. You have to work closely with them on things that are going to impact their employees and their clients because they're part of the family. But I always felt like I had a lot of room and authority to operate within my charter. And it was generally pretty broad. I think the second one is, and again, this is an advantage for a non-family executive, you feel like you're part of the family. You're immediately brought into that inner circle. Now, there's layers within the inner circle, but I felt that as part of the family, you're really making a difference. I think all of us want to make a difference in our careers.
Sure.
And when you're talking to the owner and the families around the table, you really feel that makes a difference. And that's different from a public company where as a mid-level or a higher level manager, it was hard to move the stock price as no matter where you were. And so it wasn't so much like you weren't making a difference, but you couldn't see the difference the way you can in a family business.
Understood. Understood. How about the flip side of that question? What might be some of the challenges or blind spots that a non-family executive might encounter when entering into a family-governed organization?
Yeah, that's a good question. And there's a lot of layers to that one as well. I think there may be a reluctance to engage or listen to outsiders on the business side, consultants, coaches, et cetera. In some cases, they know what they know, and that's made them successful over the years. A successful business owner may like his or her trajectory. They took the big risks, so they're meeting or exceeding their own expectations. And so it's an effort for them to consider bringing an outsider in. There has to be a compelling case. However, we'll look at the flip side of that as well and say that once they do bring people in and they trust them, they do tend to allocate resources. And bottom line, it comes down to trust. They will deeply engage with the people that are advising them. We had a saying at one of my old firms that once people got used to it, they go, "Hey, you look, even Olympic athletes have coaches." So that was a good thing. I think one of the other blind spots, and maybe it's not so much a blind spot, you could see this in a regular public company, is that some family business members do not have experience outside the company. And you're coming in with a lot of experience and you've seen things in a wider perspective. My experience is you need to be careful as an outsider on how you frame your message, as suggestions or consider options. I think if you come in hot with, "Hey, this is what we need to do, this is top," I think you end up stepping on toes. And if you don't know the pecking order, if you don't know who the influences are, those firm messages can cause some issues. And I think the final one, and this is a blind spot that you learn very quickly, is that some family members who aren't in the business have a voice in the business. And your voice may be secondary to those non-family members. And that's not a bad thing. It's just something that you need to understand. So my advice to non-family execs is to get to know the family. If you're an executive, they are happy to have you there. You're there to help get them to a different point from where they are. And you'll learn who has influence, who is standing by the sideline, who wants to be involved. And that helps you make sure that you know where your voice can be best heard or where it's a good idea just to keep your mouth shut.
And that's a great point. Certainly, I would say a lot more questions maybe need to be asked when entering. I'm recalling a CEO made a presentation. He said, "I love it. It's great." He's like, "Can you make the same presentation to my sister?" I'm
Yes.
thinking, one, didn't know you had a sister. And two, why am I making this presentation to her? And he said, "She's got a an interest. She's a stakeholder. She's not an
Yes.
operating stakeholder, but she's a stakeholder. So she will certainly want to know what's going on." So made the presentation to his sister and everything was fine. But yeah, you never know what's there until you start asking some questions about,
Yes.
you
Ed,
know, how is this
it's
organization?
interesting you would say that. In some family businesses, as the business matures, some family members tend to go into what I'll call adjacent sides of the business. If you have a technical firm, there may be a firm that manages real estate, maybe a firm that manages financing. And to your point, you may end up talking to one or all of them as you're coming into a business to help one because you will be at the table. They will be considering the decisions that you make. It's a good point.
Absolutely. So you've been successful in several roles where there's been a family business dynamic. So not only do you have one or several family members that are involved in the business, you've also oftentimes have long tenured employees, you know, people that have been there for 10 years, 20 years, sometimes 30 years or more. When you are coming in from the outside, what are some of the things that you do to start to accelerate that trust we talked about and earn that trust with the people there, both family and non-family, who are maybe your tenured employees as well?
It's vital, absolutely vital. And the first one with family members obviously is right up front. But the long-term tenured employees, I'm glad you asked that. But I'll address the first one with the family is focus on what the founder wants to do. I think that's the same in any business. I've heard another saying, "What interests my boss fascinates me." And if you can approach problem with diplomatic directness, because they want your opinion, you just need to make sure that You couch it in a way that they can easily listen, and then you're sincere about your decisions. I find that having passion about what you want to do, measured passion, is an important part for them listening to you. And I think the second part too, and this is early on, if you're coming in and your charter is to make changes, make sure you get small wins early and then telegraph your approach to the founder as well as the family members and others. It sounds pretty basic, but one of the things to recognize is that the family's taken a risk by hiring an outside executive, and a major change to the company reflects on their reputation as good decision makers. And you don't want to put them in a position where they may regret what they did. And remember, the buck stops at the boss's desk, and that in some cases is just right above your level. So make sure that she or he knows what your plans are. And then to address the last one about long tenured employees, they have a lot of influence in the business. But what I find is the best thing to do is just be a good leader. Tell people what you plan to do, tell them how you're going to do it. It's especially important to tell them why it will work. People are smart. They understand the market. They understand the business that they're in. You need to show them that the owner is behind this. You don't want to be going out on a limb on your own. I like to bring the owner in when I'm having these discussions with employees and say, well, the boss is on board. This is what we're going to do. And I have the boss in the back nodding and go, yep, that's what we're going to do. Maybe have them send out an email confirming what you said. But the most important thing here is shoulder the responsibility when things don't go as planned. It's not necessarily a human nature thing to do, but I'll tell you what, if employees know that you're going to protect them, they'll walk a million miles for you and they'll intercede with the boss. They go, this is a good person. Their heart's in the right place. And yeah, some things fell down. Some of them may even admit later to mistakes. But if you stand up in front of them and you protect them, you'll have a little tsunami behind you. So that's what I would do.
Have you ever been in a situation where, whether it be a family member in the business or a long-tenured employee, and you're coming in to support change, support operational excellence or growth, and you say, okay, good person, but they're in the wrong seat? Have you ever run into that? And how do you handle that?
Yeah, that's the part of every business. And recognizing that sometimes the people that got you there won't get you to where you want to go. And I like how you couched it. Can we reframe them in a different role? So that's something that you do. Again, you do it very diplomatically. There's a lot of conversations at the top about what might work, and you try to explore as many options as possible. There are times when it's just not a mesh. We've created different business entities just for people that aren't going to fit within the existing regime to operate or to work within. And what I find too is that time changes a lot of things, and especially within a family, things happen and over a period of years, then they can, I'll say that they die down a little bit and people's attitudes change. And that's I'll say a cautionary tale to non-execs, non-family execs as well, is that things will change. They will come back. And we'll talk about values in a little bit too, but understanding that helps you adjust to what role someone might be able to take if they're not going to fit with where the owner wants things to go. And oh, by the way, the owner could change their mind, decide, ah, I don't want to do that. I'd rather have the family member be a part. So it's fair.
In fact, I know a situation where a leadership executive in the business development side of an organization helping grow it. There was a son who was in a leadership role that was, let's just say, not in the right seat. And this executive went to the CEO and said, listen, I don't think this is going to work. And the CEO turned around and said, okay, you run the company. And so it was an interesting turn. He was thinking that this will be a departure. And in fact, it was a promotion.
At every level of companies, the closer you get to the top, the more it becomes about the people that work for you.
Yeah. So if someone's considering joining a family business in a senior role, what questions should they ask before they say yes?
Yeah, this is multifaceted, and it's likely the same for executives in any type of company, but it's important just as an executive to understand your roles and responsibilities. That's the same as any business. Depending on your confidence on who, I would always suggest getting that documented in an expectations document. People have different recollections. I think specific to a family business, here's some questions I would ask. It's, and again, a lot of these are going to be similar to public business. Why am I being hired? And what's behind that is what's changed within the company to support this decision? Is this a strategic move? Is this caused by a family situation that helps put things in context for you as an exec? I like to ask questions about values to ensure alignment. I found that if your sole focus is on making money, if something happens and your actions don't contribute directly to the bottom line, you got to recognize that you're a cost to the family business. So the values should be broader than that. And typically they are, but that's important to know. I like to ask about vision and strategy. And this is the key part of a family business coming in as a non-family exec is you're looking for a founder who sees a viable future and takes into account changing in market conditions, but this could include the transition to the next generation. So if the topic of family business transition does not come up, it's a good time to bring it up. I always find it's important to have that conversation on the back burner, even though it's not imminent, because a lot of people just don't think about it. And the record of transition in family businesses is not fantastic. So it's good to think about. I ask how decisions are made. And I'll laugh a little bit here because sometimes that doesn't come out right away. You look at that over a period of time. Is it done by the organization? Is it done by the family? Is it some combination? A favorite question of mine is, where are the bright lines in the leadership organization and where's the drama? And I found owners to be quite frank with that question. And knowing where the drama is in an organization and those lines that you should be careful crossing, it's vitally important. And again, when I have found owners that are very open and honest about it, that's really helped me on ramp to a really good job. And then I'll finalize that by saying, hey, what are the top three priorities you have? What do you expect me to be working on? And I'd say after those five or six questions, you can walk out of that conversation. You got a good understanding of why you're there and where you fit, potential issues to avoid, and your marching orders as well as your measuring stick. Now, I just want to caution non-family execs here that things change. Family businesses generally are not multi-billion dollar corporations, with the exception of the Mars family and a few others. But the owner's interest in the business itself, in transition, a potential or actual business sale, this all causes a reflection. And this is deep reflection. Again, you've heard this on the podcast before. This has been their life. And there's emotion involved. In some cases, there'll be changes in direction. So, as a non-family exec, to the best of your ability, take this in stride. I see the role as a non-family exec for the most part as a steward of the business. Your job is to keep things going and positively moving in a growing direction. It's normal to get frustrated, but as they say, this too shall pass. So stay the course, support the owner, understand these things are going to happen, and just try to let it go.
So some great takeaways there, especially the question about where is the drama? I think that's such a huge question, and I can see that going in many directions, but I think what you get down is to the version of the truth that you're looking for, you know, what's really going on here. That's why I love that question. You raised another point about, and I think you were what I think brought into that there was a leadership transition underway. So as a non-family leader, how do you navigate those conversations around succession? Are you brought into this? And if you are, what's your place or position in discussing those openly?
Generally, I find those conversations to be mostly within the family. And when you're brought into them, there's a couple of considerations. Again, be mindful. This is a stressful time. And you're thinking about transition. Do the adult children want the business? Who in the lineup is best suited to do that? If no one's there, are you looking for an outside sale? I was listening to a Schwab podcast a little while ago, and it said 40% of businesses have successful transition to the next generation. It said only 13% of the third generation. And family businesses know this. They're not going to say it out loud. So be, again, be empathetic, be supportive. It's important to not take sides. I would suggest a couple of things. Number one, remember you're a steward of the business, so your job's to run the business. And we talked about leadership. Your job really is to shield employees and clients from what's happening and make sure that you're seeing a steady, impartial guiding hand. The second is I suggest reading as much as you can about family business transitions, both the successful ones and the non-successful ones. Be educated on what works and what doesn't. Again, emotion and stress sometimes can distract from strategic initiatives. And just being able to provide a sounding board and saying, hey, I've read about this, I've done this, that can be helpful. And finalize this, as you've heard on podcasts with earlier guests, and even with your own dad, too. The founder has poured his or her life into the business, and transition is just that's just a tough event. So your best bet is to be an impartial sounding board, but better still, just listen. And it may be that you don't talk for a half an hour, and your final words are, how can I help? So that's what I would say.
So when you see a generational transition, and I know the stats. In fact, when I was just starting out here, my dad was still in the business, a consultant came up to me and said something, oh, 85% of businesses fail from one generation to the next. I was like, thanks for that data point. I really needed to hear that at the front end of my career here.
Don't hire that guy.
But what do you look for? So you see maybe a second gen, maybe a third who's being groomed for, what are you looking for from that person? What do you want to see from that person to have some assurance that, yeah, this person is up to task, this person can make that transition and be one of the success stories, not one of the failures?
And that's a really good question. And my answer to that fits, I'd say, with any employee. You look for intelligence, you look for curiosity, and you look for drive. Generally, within the family, the values are aligned, so that's generally not an issue. And if you see those three together, that you can generally rely on someone to pick up the ball and run with it. Everyone needs education, but it's very difficult to be put in the driver's seat on day one, know everything. You can't do it. That's what advisors are for. That's why the founder hangs around. But the challenge sometimes can come in when you have multiple siblings and maybe nieces and nephews that are involved in the business, and they are like-minded. They're smart, they're ambitious, they've got a lot to do with running a business in the past. A challenge is introduced there if someone may be lacking in one of those areas, but still feels like they should be considered. So that's a family dynamic to be considered.
I often look for when I see a next generation that's in the wings, right? If they have a vision and it's their own, and sometimes they're young, it doesn't even have to be a good vision. It just has to be theirs. Because doing it a little bit better than my mom or dad did is not a vision. And the reason I often look for that or always look for that is things change. Our world changes. As you say, the dynamics of the business change. You made that point very clearly. The world around us changes. So if you're going to try to bring an organization forward on the inertia that was basically rear view, the past may not work so well. So they have to have their own sense of what's next for this organization, even if it's not perfectly defined. What are your thoughts on that? Do you look for that as well? Do you see that show up?
That's a great exclamation point. Part of, in my opinion, part of forming a vision and having one for yourself is recognizing sometimes they don't work out. And so just the practice of coming up with vision or coming up with strategy makes you better at doing. You know, it's like an artist, they continue to sketch and they be better and better. It's the same thing in business. No business ever popped out of the box and was 100% at the top. There's been incremental changes, there've been step changes, but to your point, if someone you want to elevate a one of your adult children into the role as president, their ideas are things that can take the company elsewhere. And you know, you and I have both read about this and experienced this. Sometimes someone will come into the business, one of the children, who's had an advanced degree, say in data analytics or something else, and all of a sudden something brand new pops out of the business that's either adjacent but aligned. And then you'll find that people within the company at all different levels of experience will say, hey, why haven't we done that before? And that tends to carry new momentum in. So I agree with you that the vision is very important. Again, understanding that it's a, I'll call it a practice run, but you need to continue to do that. And what you learn as a businessman, you've experienced this, is as times change, adapt. It's a good starting point. I like that.
So now that you're leading your own firm, how are some of these experiences that you've had showing up in your advisory work today?
Oh, they're all over the place. And I'll just lean into what I do or maybe how I get into an engagement. I think The first question when I talk to an owner is, why are we having this conversation? And that tends to expose some of those interview type questions. What's going on in your business? Is there something structural going on? Could be sad to say, sometimes I run into owners that are just tired of running their business. And we tend to fall back. And as they talk, they'll explain a little bit of what's going on. From that point, too, what I find with that question, it's interesting, is that sometimes they know where they want to go. They're just looking to have their opinions or thoughts validated. So a lot of those conversations are short and they end with, thank you, that's what I thought, which is neat. I also like to ask about the company's story along with their values. That story is immensely powerful. How you founded the firm, some of the things that you went through, your first customer, how you expanded into different areas. I find that founder stories are a really powerful mean of instilling company culture. They can also be a very powerful sales tool. So as I'm having this conversation, it can lead in many different directions, but sometimes it recenters a founder on, yeah, that's really what we're good at. And that conversation is helpful from a strategic standpoint, is I can do these other things that are adjacent, but I really need to stay focused on what I'm doing. And then most importantly, Ed, this is vital for everyone to understand, especially non-family execs, is that all family businesses, like families, are unique. And at any point in the business cycle, they can find different things going on. So I think it's important to find the uniqueness of the story. And then the issues that go behind them help frame that. So I ask why things are the way they are. And my any, I'd say, consultation is tailored to that uniqueness. One size does not fit all, and a family business does not want to hear that. They may want to hear that just from a what works in industry, but when you talk about adapting to what they want to do, they go, how does this solution uniquely fit my culture? And I find that to be really important. So I like to, from my standpoint, I'd like to emerge from these conversations and engagements as an unbiased perspective and a trusted advisor who really can tailor industry solutions to exactly what they need.
That said, when it comes to a family-governed business, what are the, when it comes to your work now as Basel Advisory Group, what are some of the things that they're often missing or lacking, where you could plug in and really help? Where are their, the, what are some of their common issues that they're struggling with that you see more often than not?
Yeah, great question. It really depends on where they are in their business cycle. It depends on where they are in family transition. There's a lot of market economics that are affecting things now. I think the biggest one for mature owners is succession. Have they thought about succession? And if you haven't, what does that look like? I like to say, at what point in your career would you like to be not working in the business? Not surprisingly, many of them say, I always want to have some footprint in the business. Okay, great. At what point do you want to draw out meaningful funds and then be able to take months off? And that settles on a timing endpoint. And then you say, okay, here we are today. We're 5 years, we're 10 years out. What needs to happen in that gap of time to help prepare for that? Again, I read this statistic that said that 70% of family businesses think it's important to have a succession plan, but only 20% have that plan. So those questions, as you're asking, tend to generate some thought. When do you want to retire, or when do you want to take money out of the business, and where are you today? What is it going to take to close that gap? I think that's top. Another one is when families have everyone's grown up within the business and their processes have worked a certain way, and they may either experience loss of market share, or they see it coming, or there's new technology, and they're a little hesitant to try different things. It's not a difficult thing for you and I to look at it from the outside and say, we'll try this and this, but it is a little more difficult internally because there's a risk. There's a risk to spending money on incorporating AI technology. What's that going to do to employee? What's that going to do to our clients? Should we buy new machinery? Do we invest in this big capital project? You've got a whole issue there of how can we maintain family ownership of the business, but we need to borrow capital in order to make this next step. Do you get a loan? Do you go out to a private lender? And do you give up control? So a lot of these questions, I think, are back to the uniqueness part of this, is where are you today in the cycle? What do you anticipate happening in the next 5 to 10 years? What's your current hurdle, and what hurdles do you see in the next 3 to 5 years that could disrupt your business? Dialing it back in a sort of a general consultant question, and I think this goes back to the founders of Intel. Years ago, they were competing in the market for memory chips, and they were beginning to get just hammered. They were trying to decide whether they should go into computational type of chip making. And so Andy Grove and Gordon Moore, I think, were the two founders. And I think Andy said, if we got fired today and they threw us out the door, but then they hired us back in, what would we do differently? And Gordon Moore said, well, we would go into the computing business. We'd get out of memory, which at the time I think was 90 to 95% of Intel's business. That's a big step. And I think just having that conversation, a lot of owners, they'll recognize that. And it begins the process. It doesn't take you through to the end. But in terms of helping an owner get to the next step, it's recognizing it's been done before. It's a major step, but it's easy just to get started talking about it, similar to the vision.
And that's a number of great points there. But really, as I'm listening to this, it's I think the asking of big questions, sometimes hard questions to answer, but big questions. And a lot of times they're not asked simply because, and I'll speak from my own experience, so much of me was shaped by my dad, because that was my model. I didn't have another model. That was the model. Even when recently somebody posed to me, but when do you think you'll be done working? And the answer that rolled off my tongue was 70. And they're like, why 70? And I'm thinking, well, that's when my dad stopped working. Like,
Okay. All right.
and
Hey, it's a
then I started
benchmark,
to think
right?
that wasn't a really good answer, was it?
No, it's not a bad answer. And backing up to your point here, I don't know that people don't ask those questions because they're scared of them. I think sometimes they get tied up in the day-to-day and they just don't think about it. The business is
Yeah.
moving along and you're doing okay, but then someone asks you a question. And it's not unusual to have someone sit back and look at the ceiling and go, why didn't I ask that question?
Yeah. But sometimes it takes somebody from the outside to prompt that and to prompt that thinking. And then when they do, it can really ignite something special, as you know firsthand a couple of times over. Final question. If somebody listening is interested in connecting with you or learning more about the work you do as part of Basel Advisory Group, what's the best way for them to connect?
And I'd encourage them to go to my website at BasilAdvising.com, Basil, spelled like the herb, or to my LinkedIn page. I've got a whole history of my past experiences, and it'll connect you directly to Basil Advisory Group. So, if you need assistance in strategy, organizational work process consulting, leadership development, or training, I'd consider myself to be a pretty good resource for family businesses.
Awesome. Awesome. John, thank you for sharing your insights and for giving us a front row view of what it means to lead from within a family business as an outsider. Your experience is incredibly valuable to leaders and I think families alike. Again, we've been speaking with John Basel, founder of Basel Advisory Group, and a trusted voice on leadership strategy and navigating the family business landscape with clarity and care. And I'm Ed Dalia, your host. This is Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Thank you, John. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me, Ed.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.dalianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at dalianet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed Dalia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.